Unveiling the truth they don't want you to see. This is the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome to the fourth hour of the Alex Jones Show. I'm your guest host, Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis. And today I'm going to walk you through, again, some of the classic texts that admit everything that we're seeing roll out today. These classic texts will be then a demonstration, a proof that we're not conspiracy theorists, but in fact, we are conspiracy realists. We are espionage students. We are history buffs. We're not lunatics that just come up with stuff with no backing or basis. In fact, we're going to see as we walk through some of these key texts, some of which you've heard me talk about before and some you haven't, these key texts admit the technocratic, internationalist, globalist agenda that includes Zionism as well as part of an overall strategy to bring about a new world order. This new world order is not capitalist or socialist Marxist in the classical sense. It's a hybrid of all of these into a new type of system run by computers, supercomputers from centralized megacities underneath giant continental unions. In order to get to that end goal, the establishment needs a specific type of currency that's one world and universal and controlled by a central hub. It needs a single world religion that thus props up the beast system. And it needs a centralized global state. So one world religion, one world currency, and one world government. Those are all the key plans that we can't forget that are the real overall plan of all of this. And we just saw this week, as I highlighted the other day, as I predicted for many, many years, I've been talking about the union between the Roman Catholic Church and Islam and other religions to create a supra mega perennialist religion for probably 20 years. And then beyond that, we've talked about Dune and the way that Dune, for example, last week or a few days ago, we talked about Dune predicts this convergence into a future world religion that combines Islam with Catholicism. And they have their own Bible in the Dune story called the Orange Catholic Bible. So we talked about that a couple of days ago, but that's fiction. And of course, a lot of times fiction encodes and predicts through predictive programming, you could say, a lot of what comes about in reality. And there's a lot of reasons how and why it does that. Sometimes the authors are insiders. Sometimes they know very powerful people. Sometimes, like Philip K. Dick, they're in the circles of people in Silicon Valley, so he can write into his dystopian sci-fi classics what the elite have planned. Sometimes it's people who are in the British establishment, and they hear about what's going on, and they write books like Wanting Seed, Anthony Burgess, who wrote the novel about enforced homosexuality in the future dystopia, very close to what Huxley put in Brave New World, which is the idea that there's enforced basically you have to sleep with everybody. So it's illegal not to touch butts with anyone who requests it. And you're medicated if you disagree because something's wrong with you. Why would you not want to sleep with everyone? So this all becomes a mandated technocracy where you're controlled by your addictions and your passions. You're given Soma in Brave New World, which is a drug that makes you kind of lackadaisical, and you have this sort of drug trip experience. And in the religion of Brave New World, it's connected to a kind of orgy that mimics the Christian religious service, almost kind of like a new agey black mass where everybody's sort of just sort of having sex, but also taking a kind of quasi hallucinogenic drug. That's the religious service that you see in Brave New World. And that's where all the rainbow churches would like to take everybody in the future, as well as this new alliance that's forged between the Vatican and Islam now publicly, globally, in response supposedly to the evils of Donald Trump going to war in Iran. Now, I disagree with Donald Trump's war in Iran. However, that's a false choice. I don't have to choose the globalist socialist papacy uniting with Islam or the Zionist approach that Donald Trump has. What if I reject both of those because, as an Orthodox Christian, I don't believe either of those approaches are correct? So there's other options that we can choose in the midst of false dialectics and false choices, false either ors. But when we want to talk about these books and how well laid out this is, there's so many of them that it's actually difficult to really pick the best or the worst or whatever, because so many of these writings of the elite over the last century, they actually have each one of them kind of has unique angles and pieces that it brings to the table, puzzle pieces that it fits in with their overall picture. But if we were to rewind a long time ago, you heard me mention this a couple days ago. There was a famous count named Count Kudenhove Kalergi, and he wrote a book called Practical Idealism. And you may have heard people say, this is the Kalergi plan, the Kalergi plan. And this book was written in 1925. And the point of this book was that there has to be a European Union that would eventually erase every tribe and ethnic and you could call it a European nation state group, right? So there won't be Scots people, there won't be Irish people, there won't be Britons, there won't be Italians, there won't be French. They will all be blended into a generic glob, a blob union, erasing all of their unique cultural distinctives under the banner of equality, egalitarianism, and freedom and unity. And he argues that this will be done through not just the EU, but that it will create the rise of a Jewish superclass. Now, that's his argument, not mine. So if you take issue with that, if you say, oh, that's an evil conspiracy theory, well, I mean, he says it clear as day within the first 30 or 40 pages. He talks about that. Now, you say, well, who cares what this guy says? Who is he? Well, this plan was presented to the elites of the British Empire, and they said, we like your plan. This is covered in Quigley's Anglo-American Establishment book, which is kind of a sequel to Tragedy and Hope. And in the Anglo-American Establishment, the elites of Britain said, this is the Rothschilds and the Fabians and the Milner elite. They said, we like your plan, Count, but we also like Lord Curtis's plan. So we're going to go with a blend of both of those. And Lord Curtis's plan was what he called the Commonwealth of God, which was a kind of rebranding of the British Empire to be a kind of a light Fabian socialist global order. That was the Commonwealth of God plan. And this is Count Kudenhove Kalergi's counter plan that also blends very well with that. So the next time somebody says, well, there's no evidence for that, it doesn't exist, you can point out the UN replacement migration documents that Alex has highlighted for 10, 15 years. You can point out the banker Larry Summers, who said that it's time to erase, Peter Sutherland. Peter Sutherland, the European banker, said that the banking elite have already determined that it's time to erase the unique European people groups with mass migration and other techniques to essentially breed them out. So that's why there's a massive influx of Muslims into Europe. And similar strategies are used, of course, in the United States as well. And that's including in the last several years, more and more Muslims as well. We know that, for example, Max Blumenthal's book, Management of Savagery, he talks about the billions of dollars that the Saudis alone have put into funding Islamic education centers and mosques in the United States, combined with the massive importation of people from Islamic countries. There is definitely a strategy to dilute and change the existing demographics and population. And that's not a conspiracy theory, it's a form of warfare, right? There's books that are out of Cornell University, that are out of the Army War College. Kelly Greenhalgh has a book called Weapons of Mass Migration. It's an academic text. And so it's not a conspiracy theory to talk about the use of people groups as demographic warfare. If you remember a few years ago, even Erdogan made this clear when he says, if you don't do what we want, we will flood your country with infinity migrants. And so he even threatened this as an open form of warfare, showing that demographic warfare is well known to political leaders, well known to generals and army commanders, because it's an ancient technique, it's an ancient strategy, as well as other types of non-kinetic techniques, fifth generational warfare, things that include cultural war, things that include flooding the country or the target area with extreme forms of vice, extreme forms of pornography. We know that this happened to the people in Palestine. In Gaza, they were flooded with hardcore porn by the IDF. and the Mossad some years ago, and that's all publicly on record as a form of psychological warfare. You also have, of course, economic warfare. So all of these techniques are used, and it's important to point out that none of these are new. They're just sort of refined, and they're scientifically updated to be a mad scientist's insane, crazy dream. Now, a book that a friend of mine sent to me some years ago, right when the COVID psyop was let loose, is a book called Millennium. And Millennium is a collection of all of these sort of Barbara Marx Hubbard, Timothy Leary, Carl Rogers, Jonas Salk, Marilyn Ferguson, Willis Harmon type New World Order figures associated typically with sort of the boomer counterculture revolution of the 1960s. But they had a huge impact on the changing of the landscape of American morals and thought. And these essays are all collected together in a book in 1981 that talks about essential and non-essential workers. Willis Harmon, who's a big Stanford Research SRI guy who's written all types of globalist elite documents, one of which he had a huge role in was the Robert Maxwell published book, Changing Image as a Man, which we covered in studio with Alex when I got a hold of a hard copy. And that was, I think, a pretty definitive text, an elite textbook level text for grad students who would be going into the bureaucratic system. And that was used at a high level in high level universities for international relations students that were graduating in the 1980s. This book also came out in the early 1980s. And Willis Harmon says that in the future, we're going to understand that there's extra people, and the extra people are going to be a class lower. So you thought that you were getting a new world order of egalitarianism and radical equalitarianism where everyone's equal. But no, there will be a strata. It's just that strata will be determined by the technocrats who decide who the essential and non-essential workers are. And of course, the non-essential workers are the extra people. You may recall David Attenborough, the famous wildlife BBC Malthusian, who often talked about the extra people. What will we do with the extra people? Perhaps we shall have to get rid of them. He always said this in his documentaries. That's a term that the Malthusians use for all the people that they see as essentially the profane and the worthless. So Willis Harmon argues that in the post-industrial society of the future, when the technocracy comes in, you'll have a universal basic income that's a form of social credit that determines your social worth, and everything will be needs-based. There won't be this idea of merit and you pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and creating your own small business. It will all be essentially apportioned to you because you are part of a collective. And so austerity collectivism will come into vogue, and even perhaps tiny living. You notice that tiny living is being promoted everywhere by design. It's very fashionable, especially when there's a bad economy. So why not just work from home in the future? Yes, talks about working from home, 1981. And the idea would be that in this great technocratic future, the new ethic will be eco-based. So we'll base everything around what's good and bad for the environment, including how much population is allowed. And essentially that'll be decided by computers because we can't leave that to humans. They're subject to fallible emotions. So technocracy requires that in the future, the non-essential workers, their lifespans will be determined by how useful they are to the collective system and to Mother Earth. Social planning is the future, and all of society has moved and evolved from individual thinking in the West to collective thinking. So it's time to give up individuality for the good of the whole, the good of the collective. Now, remember, this didn't go away just because Trump got elected. The overall technocratic agenda, just because people aren't talking about it or because people think, oh, we've won, trust the plan. No. All of this continues to march on. Just look at all the technocrats who are pushing for all of the worst things at Bilderberg just last week. All the same technocratic agenda that everybody thought, oh, well, forget about it. You know, Trump's elected. Who cares? It's all good now. We won. We're taking over. None of that changed. In fact, it was all reiterated, and perhaps they got more done because people thought, oh, well, we've actually won, so there's no concern. We don't have to worry about it anymore. The other chapters in this book are relevant, but not super relevant for what we're going to be talking about today. But you do have figures like Timothy Leary talking about a kind of a new satanic era of the future that would be based around transhumanism. And he himself was an explicit Satanist. He said he was, quote, carrying on the work of Aleister Crowley. And so to give all the boomers LSD was actually a means of enlightening them and waking them up from being essentially corporate of 1950s creations. And now in the future, he says, transhumanism, genetic modification, cloning, and the return of Gaia will be the future world that we go into. If you go to places in California, like Topanga Canyon or wherever you find like kind of Instagram yoga chick new age communities, it's all boomers that run those that come out of the Tim Leary mindset. And it's funny to see the way that they think this is going to come about. Like everybody sort of, they think that you're going to set up this sort of like massively depopulated tribal return to primitivism setting, which is just so unrealistic given the nature of the global economy, how integrated it is with technology. This idea that you're going to have some sort of like indigenous tribal setting where, I don't know, really cool acid dropping boomers are going to be alive and leading everybody into this golden aeon. It's really preposterous, but it's very useful for social engineering and for convincing people that you can create this kind of a new world just out of thin air, right? Not a whole lot of difference between that and the absurd idealism of a classical Marxist that we'll just get all the workers to rise up and then everybody will be fair and everything will be equal and we'll just divide everything up and it'll be perfect equality. Again, to go back to some of the classics so you don't forget, David Rockefeller, who probably one of the most powerful men in the history of the United States, created essentially the Council on Foreign Relations, created the Trilateral Commission out of that, helped to create the Bilderberg Group, essentially donated the land for the United Nations, had a huge role in the creation of the OSS and the CIA. I mean, on and on and on. You can't get away from J.P. Morgan Chase and Chase Bank and Standard Oil and all of the tremendous industrial magnate, oligarch, barren power that the Rockefeller family has had. You really can't get away from that. But maybe they aren't conspiratorial. Maybe we're just making this up. Maybe it's all just for the good of the country and they're very nice people. Well, in the photos, which we always overlook the photos, you'll find him here gleefully meeting with Chinese communist leaders. And so he preceded Nixon. Here's, I think, Nixon down here with Kissinger when he went to China. But before that, David Rockefeller prepared the way for Nixon to do that by going and setting up Chase Bank as the first bank in communist China. And that's why, by the way, here he is praising Nelson Mandela, meeting with and praising Nelson Mandela. Here he is at NAFTA, the push for NAFTA. So you'll find the Rockefellers are pretty much at the heart of everything, including the erection of the first major bank in Red China. And they brag about this. And of course, Dave Rockefeller has a whole section in here, by the way, about his intelligence work, how he came out of being an intelligence operative and how that's really what prepared him for the future global oligarchical role that he gladly accepted. And we can't forget the classic chapter where he says that he is a proud internationalist and that people accuse him of wanting to set up a world government and being a globalist. And he says, I proudly accept that mantle. I'm absolutely ecstatic, in fact, about creating a global government. And the conspiracy theorists are correct. He actually says that. He says, yes, they are correct. I am trying to do that. Here is a whole section where he brags about creating, together with other members of the European elite, including members of the SS, Bilderberg. He says, yeah, of course, I helped create Bilderberg. I'm very proud of that. He says, it doesn't do as much as I'd hoped, but yeah, I had a huge role in creating that with Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands. And that's what our technocratic oligarchical elite is all about. He says, I worked with Etienne d'Avignon and a bunch of other oligarchs to help create the Bilderberg Group. And he says, our goal has always been and continues to be, this is pages 4, 16, and 17, the erection of a new world economic order. And I worked together with Zbigniew Brzezinski, and essentially he says our puppet, Jimmy Carter, played a huge role in this. He says that there was a brief period where Ronald Reagan thought that he would challenge the Trilateral Commission and the CFR. And he says, Ronald Reagan, he, in very coded language, he says, Ronald Reagan figured out that maybe that wasn't the best idea to challenge the CFR and the Trilateral. Maybe he's saying that that gunshot might have had something to do with that. But he says, if you want to understand how I learned all of this, this is why I constantly harp on the espionage and the spy angle to all this stuff to all you guys, which I know I get people in the comments, oh, this is boring. Who cares? Boring. Well, you're just proudly touting your own ignorance because you may think it's boring, but this is the people who rule over you. This is the people who are force feeding you the garbage physically and culturally that you eat and take into your body and into your mind. David Rockefeller says, the construction of this order, all of this, he says, is because I was an intelligence officer. I learned that my effectiveness depended upon my ability to develop networks with reliable information and influence. So he attributes his skill set to his intelligence work. Now, who did he recruit in 1990 to be another key member of the CFR to help him do what he was up to? Oh, Jeffrey Epstein. Remember in the Bannon interview, the most notorious organized crime international fixer, human trafficker, PDF blackmailer person of recent note in the last several decades was a legate, David Rockefeller, as Epstein himself bragged, not just being CFR, but also being at the Trilateral Commission. So what's the goal of these people? Well, it turns out the guy that they created the Trilateral Commission for, Zbigniew Brzezinski, wrote a book in 1970 called Between Two Ages, and he tells us everything about what the goal of the CFR and the Trilateral Commission and people like Jeffrey Epstein are ultimately up to. And it's not just sex ops and blackmail and honey traps and human trafficking. It's not just that. It's not even just money laundering. It's much bigger than that. It's a technocratic global agenda. This is Jay Dyer of Jay's Analysis, and you're watching The Alex Jones Show, fourth hour. Don't go anywhere because we've got several more amazing insights and admissions.
One of the most important things to me in my life is to get things right and to tell the truth and to be accurate. That's why they say Alex Jones is right. But it's not just our news, our prediction, our information that are incredibly accurate. It's the products. And out of all the amazing supplements at thealexjonesstore.com, our methylene blue, ultra methylene blue, is the best you're going to find on the market. It's so good for your body. Instant, clean, amazing energy. You owe it to yourself, if you sat on the fence, to go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get ultra methylene blue. And believe me, you are going to want to reorder it again. We have an 84% reorder on that product. No other supplement anywhere has anything even close. That is how amazing it is. Secure your ultra methylene blue now at thealexjonesstore.com. And thanks for keeping us on the air.
Repeat what you said is happening. You feel in the...
I feel like that stuff in my fingers. I feel tingling fingers.
There's the camera. Blast them with full power right there.
Ah! Yeah!